Hashtag murder may contain explicit and disturbing material and may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello!
And welcome to
Hashtag murder.
I'm Scar.
And I'm Dustin.
And we are millennials who love murder.
All right.
You happy to be here again, honey?
I am. I'm excited.
Okay, good.
Probably more excited about murder than I should be.
Oh.
But it's growing. It's growing on me. Watch a lot of murder shows.
Yeah. That's pretty much all I watch.
Murder shows and sports is...
And RuPaul's Drag Race.
Obviously. I mean, who doesn't watch RuPaul's Drag Race?
I don't know. I don't want to know him, but I don't know.
Yeah.
We got a shout out.
A big shout out.
Yeah. Which I missed. Of course. Well, I don't really listen to the radio, but.
Or get up in the morning.
Oh, the show starts at like 5:30 a.m.
I want to know how they do it.
Every day. I don't think so.
There is no fucking way. That means they get there at like 5. You know, 4:30? Or 4:30. Yeah, but who gave you the shout out?
Two girls and a guy in the morning.
They're actually a pretty funny show. I've heard them before. So when you said the name, I was like, I know exactly who they are.
Yeah, but they're a local Charleston radio show and they gave us a little shout out. So we're going to give them one. Although this means nothing in comparison to them shouting us out.
But no, they're pretty funny. So they have good banter. I wish I still had radio in the truck.
Yeah. Oh, that's been long gone.
Yeah. All I have are podcasts.
Yeah. The radio died a long time ago.
Yeah.
It's a sad truck.
It's not a sad truck. It's a sad radio. It's a happy truck.
With a sad radio. Oh, okay. So we did a poll on the Insta. And the question was, I tried to find it. Don't know where the fuck it went, but the picture is gone now.
Oh, God. 5 stars. Like, yes. This was the reward place.
The reward restaurant.
Kids, you guys did awesome at school this year. We are going here.
Yes.
To celebrate.
But then you are an adult now, and you're like, oh, that was not what I thought it was.
This is not a Michelin restaurant.
No. So I have the results, and I got a lot more answers than I thought I would. So Kylie said TGIF and tumbleweed. To which I added to, so Kylie, we all know Kylie.
Yeah.
I added the downtown tumbleweed because it is on the Ohio River.
Oh, and it overlooks the river?
What a treat that was if you went to downtown tumbleweed.
So that's a Midwestern restaurant, tumbleweed?
Yeah.
Not familiar to us Southerners.
I know. No one knows tumbleweed here.
Never heard of it until
tumbleweed.
You told me.
Tumbleweed.
No. No. I feel like we must go there when we go up there for Thurby.
It's terrible, but yes, we can go there. They have good drinks.
It's terrible, but it's yes, bad. We can go there.
It's not good. I feel like it used to be good, and then I went there quasi-recently. I mean, the past 7 years, and it was hot garbage, but...
But that's because you were a kid, and when you're a kid, you have no perception.
That's true. You and Har said Outback.
Outback. I remember, like, I thought we were big shit when we were taken to...
Just right.
And that, you know, like, you get the huge portions of food. Yeah, we thought we were king dangling when we got to go to Outback. You get the big steak, the bloomin' onion. They brought out the fancy bread.
The brown bread.
The brown bread, right?
That
not normal
terrible.
Bread. Not
bread
normal
bread. So bad. And I love bread.
Yeah.
I hated that bread.
But we thought we were fancy pants.
Yeah. Okay. So we got to run through these because we got a lot. And so for the ones that I didn't know anything about, I looked up reviews and then I wrote down some terrible reviews from those restaurants. Okay. So Jess said Olive Garden and Cracker Barrel. OG? Yeah.
Okay.
I thought Olive Garden was pretty fancy dancy.
My dad would be on, you know, he still, for whatever reason, he loves Golden Corral and he loves Cracker Barrel.
I think Golden Corral might be on here. Maybe. Kimberly also said Olive Garden. Mm. Morgan said Ryan's.
Oh, yeah, Ryan. Okay, a couple of steakhouses.
So Meg said Greg's. Greg's with 2 G's. It's in Rhode Island. So this is one of the ones where we have a bad review. Quote, do you want to read it?
Where am I at?
The top.
How do you mess up a Reuben sandwich? Well, all you have to do is ask Greg's Restaurant, and I'm sure they can tell you their secret. The meat is stringy, the bread is soggy, and the Thousand Island dressing has no flavor. Also, the chocolate cake is no better than a box cake. It probably was. This place is a resounding no stars.
So that was fun. Kelly and Carly both said the Old Country Time Buffet.
Also not familiar. I don't know where that is. Also not familiar with Old Country Time Buffet.
And I couldn't find a funny review for that one. Taylor said Logan's Steakhouse and or Ryan's.
Okay.
Tyler and Raynell said Chili's.
Chili's, huh?
I could get down on some chili.
They used to have this appetizer with the waffle fries and the chili and stuff on there instead of, it was like nachos, but it had waffle fries.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Oh God, it was spectacular. And then they stopped doing it. And then I stopped doing chilies.
Oh.
Bastards.
I like chilies. I think we should go there. I can get down with
it. We're going on a date night tonight.
We could go to chilies. Okay. We'll circle back to that. We had 4 people say Red Lobster.
No point.
Those Cheddar Bay biscuits are life.
That's all I would eat.
So I can agree with that one. Andy said a place called Schweffels. And I was going to have Alex read this city. But since you're here, I'm going to have you read it.
Oconomowoc.
Oconomowoc?
Oconomowoc.
Wisconsin. And there was a terrible review left here that said, quote... You want to read that one too?
The liver dumpling soup was a huge disappointment and... unbearably salty.
Liver dumpling soup. Why would that be good?
I don't. That doesn't even sound like something that I would want to taste.
Oh my God. And then Tim said Olive Garden, and then he came in hot with Ponderosa. He was like, Olive Garden. No. Ponderosa. And he said that whenever his uncle graduated from college in 1986, he and his family treated themselves to Ponderosa, and that was his family at one of their proudest moments.
I'm not familiar with Ponderosa.
No? Oh.
What is Ponderosa?
It's kind of like a shitty steakhouse.
So are we going Ryan's? Are we going Logan's? Are we going Roadhouse? Where are we at on the pecking order here?
I would say maybe below all of those. Whoa. It's not great.
Okay.
It's not great. So we had another podcast respond, and I thought it was Paranormal Fitness Podcast. Upon further inspection, it is Paranormal Misfits Podcast.
Oh, honey.
All the words ran together. But anyways, they said Shogun, which I'm familiar with from Middletown, Kentucky. I too thought that was a very fancy restaurant.
Is that hibachi?
It is. It's not that great. And this review says, quote, we ate at Shogun's last night. We have food poisoning. End quote.
Okay. All right. our insides are trying to become our outsides.
Yeah. So thank you, Paranormal Misfits Podcast. Stevie said the Western Sizzlin', which there was one in Charleston. I've never been there, but now it's the Kickin' Chicken.
Western Sizzlin' or Sizzler?
They said Sizzlin'.
I'm almost positive it is the Western Sizzler.
I don't know.
And that was the bomb.com when I was younger.
She said it's like Texas Roadhouse meets Lizard Thicket, which...
Also not familiar with Lizard Thicket.
No, actually, I didn't know that until I took my little mental health trip to the zoo, and I ate at the Lizard Thicket there in Columbia.
Okay.
Very good. Huge portions. Tara said Shells in Florida. 24 people had rated it as terrible on TripAdvisor. And Tara said, I love this particular restaurant. Or no, she didn't say this. This was one of the reviews. It said, quote, I love this particular restaurant. However, the bartender is an absolute vacuum when it comes to possessing a personality or manners, end quote.
I've never heard somebody called a vacuum before.
A vacuum. I mean. They just suck the life out of you.
They just suck, huh?
And then TVC, she said Pizza Hut, which, yes, the salad bar at Pizza Hut.
No, the book it. When you got your own personal pizza. Oh, my God.
I know. And then Stu said CeCe's Pizza, and he said, CeCe's Pizza was our shit for a long time. Went there after my second grade wrestling tournament, and every birthday, it was like 10 stars.
That is so good. But they have that dessert buffet there, so I can see how that would appeal to kids.
And the macaroni pizza. He specifically mentioned the brownies. He was like, those were just, yeah, exactly. That was it.
And I can go back and get as much as I want. Oh, yes. Yeah.
And then Miss Nina, she was the last to respond, and she said eating at home, which is very sweet.
It is, if your mom can cook.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for you...
My mother could not, would not, should not...
Be cooking.
Be cooking. It was bad.
No story you've told me about her in the kitchen has ended with like, I'd like to try that.
She burned everything. Everything was burned. Everything. How do you not learn? Oh, Becky. God love her, but good God.
Oh.
Not a good cook. Okay, so sorry that was a really long intro. I just didn't expect to get that many responses. So thank you, everyone. And if we do another poll like this, if you respond, we will read your answers on the next show.
Especially the silly ones.
Yes. Yeah, that was funny. I was
we had a good chuckle at the beginning of these stories and also especially at the end of these stories.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Here we go.
All right, what do you got for us this week, my love?
So this is, it's not really a mystery.
That's like being a little
but it,
pregnant. So
but
like
it kind of is a mystery.
It's either a mystery or it's not. Okay, come on.
And the way it goes down is very, you know what? We're just going to dive in. And this week, we are going to Huntsville, Alabama.
The Bama.
The Bama.
Bama Lama.
I wrote Home of Space Camp, Roll Tide, and... So I was in I went to AIT with a guy named Moody, PFC Moody, and he was from Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
Oh boy, so he's balls deep in some Roll Tide then.
And he said, well, he constantly was saying Roll Tide.
Oh,
that
God.
Was his thing. But there was one day, I mean, we were in Texas. It was fucking hot.
Yeah.
It was hot. Long sleeves, boots. Hats in Texas. Good God. It was
fucking
so hot.
Melting. It was so hot.
Yeah. And so we had walked from the schoolhouse to the chow hall. And I remember we were standing in line and everybody was real quiet because it was so hot. And he was like, it's hotter than two rats making love in a wool sock out here.
Yep.
And everyone lost their goddamn mind.
Yeah. That's how you get extra PT right there. A sergeant walk up and everybody's laughing their ass off for no reason. Oh, that's also where I was born.
I know. You are from L.A., Lower Alabama.
That's right.
I know.
Dothan in the house.
Oh, God. also, okay, so our victim's name is Jack Wilson, and I went to go type in to, you know, find more research, and I accidentally typed in Hack Wilson. Turns out there is a Hack Wilson that was actually murdered. So I'm going to have to look further into that.
Is my named their child Hack?
I don't know. He was a sports ball person.
The name sounds vaguely familiar, so hopefully...
Yeah. I don't know, but I thought that was pretty wild. But anyways, back to the case at hand. It is May 22nd, 1992. It is very late at night.
How late?
9:30 p.m.
Ooh, that's getting pretty close to midnight.
I know. That's very close to midnight. And a little lady named Betty Wilson is returning home from a day out of shopping. She wanted to get some new things for an upcoming trip to include a new pair of floral sneakers, which we will come back to.
Okay. Floral sneakers.
Yes.
Hate them already.
And...
I don't like them.
And so after her shopping trip, she had attended her weekly AA meeting.
Good for her.
We will also get back to that. So 46-year-old Betty gets back to the exclusive home that she shares with her husband, Jack Wilson, on the end of a cul-de-sac at 2700 Boulder Circle. And she's going to do some last-minute packing before she and Jack leave on a trip the next day to New Mexico.
Oh, okay.
So Betty enters the front door of the home, heads up the stairs, goes to turn on the hall light, and is met with a horrifying scene. She looks over, and Betty's husband, Jack, was lying on his back on the floor in a swirled pool of his own blood. Clearly, a victim of murder.
Okay.
Betty runs back down the stairs and out the front door to the neighbor's house to call 911.
How come everybody leaves the house? Are you supposed to leave the house?
You know, I was thinking that, but also if the killer is still in the house,
I want to be someplace else.
I would not want to be there.
Okay. Okay. I just, because this is not the first time that we've heard somebody has witnessed or seen something and then they have left.
I don't think that would be my first instinct. I think I would stay in the house.
Of course you would.
I wouldn't think to leave the house, but that's just me. I don't know. Anyway, she runs next door to call dispatch and through tears tells the operator that when she returned home, she found her beloved husband dead at the top of the stairs.
Did she use the word beloved? Because she sounded very guilty right now.
You don't know she's guilty.
Well, anytime they're beloved, you know, like the guy loved him so much. Like nobody asked you about that.
So, Huntsville police arrived within minutes to the Wilson residence to start investigating. When they arrive, they notice that Jack has been severely beaten and possibly stabbed, and there was a 34-inch aluminum baseball bat laying in the hallway, also covered in blood.
Damn.
They secured the scene and checked the house to make sure that the perp still isn't still there. And he wasn't. I mean, they weren't.
It was a they? There's more than one? You're giving all...
Jack's body was halfway in the primary bedroom and halfway in the hallway with feet facing the bedroom. Upon further inspection, investigators see that the phone line in the bedroom has been cut. There was a green ski mask on top of the unmade bed sheets, and they also found an empty handgun box with ammunition in the closet, but no gun.
But he wasn't shot. You said beaten and stabbed.
Not shot. Nope.
Not shot. Okay.
Nope. There were no signs of robbery being the motive. There were no tables overturned or drawers pulled out. Nothing broken, really. And they had a very upscale home. And I'm sure they had some good treasures in there. So robbery gone wrong here didn't really make much sense.
Okay.
Jack Wilson's wallet was also found on the floor next to a pair of black loafers. There was no cash in the wallet, but his cards were still there. So maybe there wasn't any cash to steal, or maybe that's the only thing they stole and they left.
It's 1992. He had cash.
Yeah.
He had cash.
Yeah, that's true. So who was Jack Wilson? And who could have possibly wanted him dead?
Dun, dun, dun.
Let's find out. Jack Wilson was 55 years old at the time of his demise. He was a very kind and generous man, and he worked as an ophthalmologist and was very well known and very well loved in his community.
Can I call time out to ask you what the hell an ophthalmologist does?
Eye doctor.
Oh.
Right?
I don't think so. I thought right? That was an optometrist. Oh.
He was an eye doctor. I might have just put that instead of optometrist. Eye surgery.
Oh, he's an eye surgeon.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, he's a big, so what you're saying...
So he's an eye surgeon, not an eye...
Just a regular run-of-the-mill doctor. Eye doctor that you go get your eyes checked from. This guy is...
He's big dude.
He's big time in it. Yes. All right.
So yes, he is an eye surgeon. Jerry McDaniel, a family friend and private investigator, stated that he couldn't even tell you how many patients Jack treated for free because they had no money to pay to go to the eye doctor, eye surgeon, and that Jack was always willing to help someone in need.
I like this guy.
I know. He's very sweet. So Jack Ray Wilson, and that is Ray with a W, W-R-A-Y, was born in Cook County in Chicago, Illinois on May 5th, 1937, and was raised by his adoptive parents. As a child, Jack had poor eyesight, so he made it his mission in life to help other people in need with their eye problems as well, which is very sweet.
That is super cool.
So Jack Wilson and Betty Woods had been married for about 14 years before the incident in 1978. They met in 1976 while working at a hospital where Jack was a fantastic eye doctor and Betty was a Southern Belle type nurse. And it was love at first sight.
Is this their first marriages?
Get it? First sight?
Oh, honey. No, I didn't. That went right over my head.
No, it is not their first marriages. They moved in together after only 2 dates.
Holy hell.
Which is what we call here a U-Haul.
No shit.
This was neither of their first marriages, and they each had 3 kids from previous partners.
So they're the Brady fucking bunch.
And that's the way they became the Brady bunch.
Shut the fuck up.
That's in my notes.
Holy hell. Please tell me that the youngest one was in curls.
I don't know. Oh my God, we never saw the kids.
Got six kids in one house? Holy shit.
Yeah, but they actually, they don't live in the house. They were older.
Oh, okay. Okay, okay.
Yeah. So although Jack's ex-wife had custody of the three children growing up, he was a wonderful and very involved father, and Betty had shared custody of her children. She had more of like a 50-50 situation. But at this point, they were like, I think they were in their 40s whenever they met. So the kids were all older and gone.
Yeah, because that's right. They made babies very young.
Yes.
Back in the day.
Super young. Get that out of the way.
Yeah.
Betty states that she and Jack were madly in love, and Jack was everything to her and her children and her grandchildren could ever dream of having in a person.
Oh, yeah. She's already got grands, huh?
Yeah. And that Jack was a very wonderful human being, that a very lavish lifestyle, a beautiful home, luxury vehicles. Betty had furs and jewelry. They were the picture perfect couple.
I'm assuming that she doesn't work no mo.
She did not.
She,
I think she maybe worked for two or three more years, and he started making a fuck ton of money, and why work?
Yeah.
No, if that, you don't have to.
She's a nurse, too. She's probably working some ridiculous hours, so.
Yeah. And fun fact, this neighborhood that they lived in, residents in Huntsville referred to their neighborhood of Boulder Circle as, quote, Pill Hill, end quote, because that's where the doctors were building all their mansions.
Okay.
Yeah.
With all the prescriptions that they're writing?
Mm-hmm. Betty, she did struggle with alcohol, but had recently been attending AA meetings to get her life back on track.
Good for her.
And I don't think I put this in here, but since he was such like a prominent doctor and had like this big circle of doctor people, they're always like going and doing and going to events. And in order to get through these events, Betty would drink. And then it turned into, I'm going to start drinking at like 3 p.m. and then maybe noon and then maybe the second I wake up in the morning.
Yeah,
and she's not working, so...
And she's home alone because there's no, you know, she didn't have the kids and it just.
Yep.
Oh boy. Okay. Well, you know, that can.
But she's getting her.
She's trying to, you know, I'm not a big fan of AA because of the whole deity part of it, you know, but whatever you got to do to get yourself where you need to be.
Wherever you think you need to be.
Yeah, go for it. Absolutely.
Okay. So Peggy Lowe, Betty's sister.
Peg.
The Pegster. Also sang high praises of Jack. Peggy said that Jack was honest and straightforward, sincere, and truly a joy to be around. So who could have possibly done this to sweet eye surgeon Jack?
Well, we're about ready to find out that the marriage wasn't awesome, I have a feeling. Because he's dealing with Drunky Drunkerson.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
that's true.
Dealing, you know, to my alcoholic. Can be difficult. All right, let's rock and roll. Where are we at?
So, the day before Jack was murdered in his own home, police from the very small town of Vincent, about 2 hours from Huntsville, had received a tip from an informant. And this informant stated that she overheard a conversation between two Vincent residents about how someone had been hired to murder a doctor in Huntsville. And that's really all this informant had. So, let's see where this leads us.
That's not a whole lot of information. I mean, you didn't... Like, who are the people and who's the target here? So, I mean, there's going to be a murder. Okay.
Yeah. And then there was a murder. So.
All right. Now we're going to have to pull this CI in and.
Yeah. Okay. So back to our dearly departed. The victim's body was transported to nearby Birmingham for autopsy. And this is super upsetting. So sorry. The coroner stated that Jack had several lacerations to the top of his head, some super deep cuts, and his skull had been fractured. Jack's hyoid bone was also broken. You know what that is?
I feel like I should, but no, it's not coming right to mind.
It's that little floaty bone that's in your neck.
Oh.
It's not connected to any other bone. It just kind of floats there. Which is indicative of your neck snapping at some point. His right shoulder was also broken, and he had a quarter-sized puncture wound to the back of the right shoulder. And both of his arms were broken.
Jesus.
And he also had two stab wounds to his abdomen. So this man clearly fought hard against his attacker and had some very serious and painful injuries before bleeding out on the floor. So not good.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, that's really disturbing.
Yeah. But the coroner ruled that blunt force trauma to the head was the official cause of death. They ran the baseball bat through the forensic team as well, and they determined that the blood was the same type as Jack Wilson's. I don't think DNA was a thing yet. You could do, like, blood type, but I don't think you could do actual DNA.
I want to say that it was a thing.
Or maybe it just wasn't a thing in...
It just took
lower Alabama.
It just took forever, I think. And there probably wasn't a ton of labs that could actually do it.
Yeah. But there were no fingerprints on the baseball bat. Boo. So yeah, that's what we have to go on. So with no evidence of who the perp was at the crime scene, investigators turn back to the information they received before the murder. You know, the chick who just so happened to overhear two people casually discussing the murder for hire of a prominent doctor.
Okay. Fucking terrible hitman.
Yeah, and they find out that the guy's name was James White. The detectives decided to take a little trip to Vincent to see if they can track down Mr. White, starting with his trailer on the outskirts of town. And yes, the whole time I was writing these notes, all I could think about was Breaking Bad.
Oh.
Mr. White! Come on, Mr. White!
Oh, God.
Okay. So, James White was the handyman at a local elementary school, where his kids also attended, at Vincent Elementary. And someone we heard from earlier also works at that school as a first grade teacher, Peggy Lowe.
Okay, so the sister-in-law.
Betty's sister, yes.
Okay.
And Peggy and Betty were more than just sisters.
What the hell does that mean?
I put they were lovers.
Excuse me?
They're not lovers. They were twins.
Oh!
Fraternal twins.
Okay. I got love for twins.
Yeah, and Peggy was right by Betty's side right after she heard of Jack's murder. So Peggy and James work at the same elementary school.
Okay.
So Peggy did know Mr. White from working at the school together, but they were also kind of friends, sort of. They were friendly to each other, and Peggy had actually hired James to do some cabinetry work for her a few months back before this whole thing went down.
Like friends with benefits friends, or just...
No, I think James liked Peggy a bit more than was reciprocated from her.
Okay.
I think he might have maybe been in love with her. Well...
He wanted to do more than hang her cabinets.
Yes. Okay. You got it.
Okay.
And one of the talking heads in one of the documentaries said that if James was ever feeling down on himself or possibly considering taking his own life, he would call Peggy to talk him down. So they have a weird little, they don't hang out.
But they talk on the phone.
Yes. And...
Okay.
Yeah. Peggy's married. We'll get to all that. Back to Mr. White. He had a bit of a sordid past, not 100% sure that he should have been working at an elementary school.
It was the 90s.
Yeah, the 90s. What are background checks? We don't know. James White had a long history of drug and alcohol abuse and was dishonorably discharged from the military, which is kind of hard to do. So clearly he done fucked up somehow.
Okay, there was some tomfoolery in his past.
Mm-hmm. So investigators brought James in for some questioning. Not a lawyer in sight.
Is he... mentally stable individual? Like, are we dealing with somebody that with an extremely low IQ, or
not necessarily.
Okay.
No. So yeah, no lawyer, and they proceeded to question him for 10 hours straight. James states that he was in fact at the Wilson household the night of the murders, but that he had been drinking all day and all night and taking pills all day and all night and smoking weed for the previous 5 days. So he'd been on a 5-day bender. And he doesn't really remember what happened the night that Jack was murdered.
But he put himself at the scene.
He did say he was there, and he did say that he remembers punching him with his fist. But he doesn't remember a baseball bat or stabbing. And that Jack told him to leave, so he did. And then James left and went back home to his trailer.
Lovely.
Investigators search James' trailer after the interrogation ended to look for more evidence against him. They found a pair of shoes with a small blood stain, which was tested and found to be a match for Jack's blood type. And directly behind his trailer, there was a small little abandoned house, which they also searched, and they found a revolver hidden under the floorboard. that was registered to... Who do you think it was registered to?
Well, we did have an empty gun case.
We did.
Is it Betty and Jax?
Yeah, it was registered to Betty Wilson.
Oh, it's Betty's gun.
It is Betty's gun. Yeah. Okay. So, Jack's wife. Yep. Investigators also search James's truck, and they find a poetry book called The Sleeping Beauty and the Firebird, which had been signed out of the library, also by a Miss Betty Wilson, on May 20th, 1992, which was 2 days before the murder.
Okay. My confusion runneth wild right now, but... Didn't continue.
There's more on that, but I'm gonna throw that in later.
Okay.
Remind me to say that later, because I might forget. Okay. So with the gun and the blood on the shoe and this random library book, things aren't looking super great for James or Betty. Investigators still don't really know what they have, but they decide to move forward and arrest James White and charge him with the murder of Jack Wilson.
Thinking maybe he just stole the gun and hid it.
Maybe. Yeah, possibly. Once in police custody, James decides it's his turn to flip the script. And he tells investigators that he was hired by wife Betty and twin sister Peggy to murder Jack Wilson for $5,000. But that it was mainly Peggy's idea. It was Peggy's idea first.
Okay.
Because Jack was allegedly abusive towards Betty and she's just trying to help her sister out.
Oh. Okay.
So this prompts detectives to bring in both Betty Wilson and Peggy Lowe for questioning on November 27th, 1992, just 5 days after Jack's murder. Betty is up first. Betty states that she and Jack didn't actually have the greatest relationship despite outward appearances. They didn't get along very well and they lived very separate lives. Betty even admitted to having numerous affairs during her marriage to Jack. And Jack had Crohn's disease, and it eventually got so bad that he had to wear, like, a colostomy bag.
No.
To which, this is not a good look. To which Betty just straight up said that she thought was repulsive. Yikes.
Yeah, okay.
And that when Jack had to start wearing the bag, it completely killed any sort of sexual attraction for Betty, and that she and Jack both agreed to an open marriage of sorts.
Then just divorce him.
He's a doctor, honey. She didn't have to work.
Well, you know what? Sacrifices then, all right?
I don't think that was happening. Okay, so with Betty not even really liking her husband and thinking he was gross, she stood to gain quite a bit in the event of his death, to include their home and property, which totaled a little over $6 million.
Okay.
In 1992 money, which is about $13 million in today's money.
Okay. It's a nice little nest egg.
It is. Betty also had several friends testify against her. They said she was mean and she said things that were very hateful to Jack and also in front of Jack to other people.
So she's a real piece of shit.
Yeah, not great. Not super great. But without James White, there would be no case against Peggy and Betty. So Mr. James drummed up a deal for a lesser sentence, and he would implicate Peggy and Betty in the murder of Jack Wilson. So Betty Wilson goes on trial first on February 23rd, 1993 in Tuscaloosa.
So they had separate trials.
They did.
Okay.
They had to move the trial from Huntsville because the case had been so sensational. James White, working with the prosecution, states that he was instructed to enter the home and wait for Jack to come upstairs and to hide in one of the bedrooms. A neighbor testified and stated that she saw Jack outside that evening around 5 p.m. and he was, like, hammering a political sign into his yard, but he wasn't using an actual hammer, he was using the baseball bat. The same bat that would later be found upstairs next to his murdered body.
Okay.
Moments later. So apparently James White lost his nerve and changed his mind about killing Jack and decided to leave. But as he was leaving, he encountered Jack in the hallway and Jack was still holding the baseball bat. The two struggled over the bat. James got the bat from Jack and proceeded to beat him in the head with it and admitted to stabbing Jack twice in the abdomen with, I guess, a knife he just had.
You know, it doesn't sound like a really awesome plan. or like this was really well thought out.
No, he didn't even
bring him. Didn't even sound like he really brought a murder weapon.
No, and he doesn't. He will later say that he doesn't really remember having a knife
because he was hella intoxicated.
Yes. James goes on to say that he then ran outside and Betty was there, and that Betty then gave James a ride back to his truck, fully knowing what had just happened inside the home. But this might not have happened and just been a tall tale that James was telling, because the forensics team searched Betty's vehicle and did not find a shred of evidence that James had ever been in it. No fingerprints, no hair, no blood. Like,
he just beat somebody to death with a baseball bat, so I'm sure that there was blood on him.
Yeah, you'd think you would have been a bloody mess. So we're still not really sure that this went down this way. And we're at trial.
It seems like they jumped into this trial rather quickly, but...
Yes! Like, they don't even have a full, coherent story.
Yeah, I mean, they got motive.
From any of them.
They got motive, means, and opportunity, so I guess they're gonna roll with it.
Yeah. So there really wasn't much evidence at all pointing to Betty from the crime scene other than James' testimony and the fact that her gun was in an abandoned building on James's property. And
but he wasn't shot.
Nope, he wasn't. And that random library book and his truck, all weird things.
That he could have taken from the house that he was at after, you know, like, oh, well, a little souvenir here, take this book.
Uh-huh. I know.
Okay, I mean...
Oh, also, this is pretty, I mean, I don't know. I don't know which way to think in this whole entire case. But James said that he met up with Betty while she was out shopping at the mall, and he stated that she was wearing floral sneakers.
Okay, they sound hideous.
Yeah. So after 6 days of testimony and 11 hours of deliberation, the jury found Betty Wilson guilty of capital murder.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
They couldn't find any reasonable doubt. Her defense lawyer sucked.
Oh, yeah. It was bad.
Oh, I mean...
Literally zero evidence other than he did have her gun, which he could have just stolen from the house, and he had the book, which he also could have just stolen from the house. That was it.
That's it. That's all you got, and you got a murderer's testimony.
Yeah.
Who's willing to implicate somebody else just to get a lighter sentence.
Yeah.
I'm not even a lawyer. I would have... danced around that, like dancing through the raindrops.
I know. So Betty was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. So
I'm not sure if she should fuck all the way off her yet or not, though, yet.
I don't know. But apparently, 1992 Alabama does not fuck around. But apparently, Betty wasn't doing herself any favors either, because, like, her defense could have said, oh, you literally just said all of this, that could have taken the gun, the book, I don't know.
Like I said, you've made me watch a lot of murder porn at this point, honey.
And she did not take the stand in her own defense.
I don't really blame people for not taking the stand in their own defense.
It made a point to say that, though.
That is 50-50 at best.
Yep. So now it's Peggy Lowe's turn to be on trial, also for the capital murder of Jack Wilson, and her trial happened 8 months after her sister's in Montgomery, Alabama.
So we got another city. So we're not in Tuscaloosa, we're in Montgomery. Okay. And 8 months. So her sister's been rotting in jail for 8 months. Is the sister about ready to roll on the sister?
Well, let's find out.
Oh, boy.
So it's not looking good for the Pegster, considering everyone knows that Betty has been sentenced to life in prison. A little more on Peggy. She was very different than her sister. She was a first grade teacher. Her and her husband loved each other very much. They attended a local Baptist church where Peggy was the lead singer and her husband was the music director. She had a very large circle of friends. Everyone loved Peggy, which is very different than how people talked about her twin sister, Betty. Because no one had much nice things to say about Betty. And remember, Betty and Peggy are here because James White told investigators that they both hired him to murder Jack.
Okay.
Now, 8 months has passed. The defense for Peggy has had some time to review everything and do some more investigating on their own. And they realized that when James White was testifying... He never, like, really admitted to killing Jack, just that he had hit him like, he'd punched him, but never once was he like, yeah, I killed him.
I hit him, but he did say he hit him with the baseball bat in the head.
No, he didn't say that. Because remember, the prosecution is like, he was hit in the head with the baseball bat, and he was stabbed, but James just said he punched him.
Oh, so we're thinking maybe, okay, all right, I'm okay. Fuck.
They also comb through the crime scene photos, and I was actually thinking this, so whenever I watched this episode, I didn't know anything about it. I just literally typed in wildest episodes of Forensic Files, and this was the first one that popped up. Okay. So whenever they're showing the crime scene photos, which we will get back to that, there's no, it's not a bloody scene. Like, there's blood on the floor,
okay,
but there's no blood on the walls, on the ceiling, on anything. It's just on the floor, which I thought was a little odd.
Yeah, if you're swinging a bat.
Yeah. So yeah, you would think there would be blood everywhere, but there just isn't. And the investigators are confused by this as well. They take the photos to the top crime scene guy in Alabama, and he's like, yeah, there's no backspatter blood, there's no offcast. Like, when you raise a bloody weapon to strike again, it would get on the ceiling, the walls, on the person.
Yeah.
It would be everywhere.
White should have been a bloody mess if he beat him to death with a baseball bat.
Yeah, and there was no blood anywhere.
So maybe this isn't the murder scene.
Maybe it's not.
Okay.
So Peggy's on trial, and they're going to rip apart James's story because there's literally no way that the murder went down the way that he said it did. And there's a quote from Peggy's attorney, David Johnson. He said, quote, "The whole case rested on a man's testimony. The man is a liar. He's a child molester. He shot his own men in Vietnam."
Excuse me?
I guess that's how he was dishonorably discharged.
Well, we kind of glazed over the whole child molester thing.
And child molester.
And he worked at a school.
He did.
Have we confirmed that he shot his own men?
That's what the guy said.
That's some pretty...
And he also said he's been on psychedelic drugs. He's a drunk. He's a dope addict. He's a cocaine user.
Why are we
believing anything that this man says?
I mean, just because he does drugs doesn't necessarily mean he can't tell the truth.
Okay, honey.
I'm picking up.
Did you forget everything else?
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Okay, all right. So yeah, basically, why are we believing anything that this man says?
As far as a witness for the prosecution goes, he's not cream of the crop.
No. And he goes on to say, quote, "The story that the murderer told didn't make any sense. Not only did it not make practical sense, it didn't make any scientific sense," end quote. So, yeah. The top forensic guy, Dr. Chris Sperry, also testified for the defense and stated that the lack of blood evidence does not match the killer's story at all, and that there should have been more blood transfer, as well as hair on the bat and in the blood. Because if someone was hit repeatedly in the head, not just with a bat, but with like any sort of blunt instrument, there would have been hair on,
yeah,
head hair on the instrument. And Dr. Chris also goes on to say that he doesn't even think that the bat was the murder weapon at all. It had some blood on it, but like not enough for the events that were being described.
Oh, okay.
Because a bat would cause crushing of the skull, mm-hmm, like an indentation, not lacerations. And that he thinks that the likely murder weapon was a fireplace poker.
Oh.
Especially since he had that quarter-sized puncture wound to the back of his shoulder.
Ah, okay.
And, yeah, and that particular injury never had any sort of explanation in Betty's trial. Like, it wasn't even...
Well, if you're the prosecutor, you don't even bring that shit the fuck up.
Yeah, that's true. So, I don't know. I don't know how that went unexplained, and I don't know. So Jack's hyoid bone had also been broken. And that really only happens if someone is like hung or strangled. And this was also not addressed in Betty's trial or with James White's description of the murder.
Did they say that he had like ligature marks or anything like that on his neck? Or just that the hyoid bone was...
Just that the bone was broken, which would say to me... manual strangulation.
Okay.
Not with like any sort of...
Yeah, you would still think there would be handprints or something to apply that much pressure to break the fucking bone? Bruising? Some kind of something? What about...
Oh, there was bruising.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll get to it. Now, the prosecution is up in arms with all this new evidence and findings, and they're like, does it really matter what killed Jack? Or does it matter who killed Jack? Which, like, yeah, but...
No, the how.
Also.
The how matters.
Because the evidence has to make sense, or else how can you definitively know how it went down?
Correct. We're talking about somebody's life here.
If the person you think did it even did it at all.
Correct.
So, like, yes.
Details fucking matter. The how matters.
Does matter. I don't know. I thought that was kind of stupid. So now it's the defense's turn to tell the jury what they think happened. So they're going to propose a whole new theory. They propose that after Jack was seen putting up the sign in the yard with the baseball bat, that he was ambushed by two or three men, still likely that it was James, but that there were other people with him,
okay,
who were hiding in the garage. The masked men attacked Jack Wilson and drug him into the backyard, where they beat him with a fire poker, stabbing him once in the shoulder, creating the puncture wound. The men then got a tarp from the garage and carried Jack's body to the second floor of the home, placing it in the doorway of the hall and the primary bedroom. Feet facing the hall at first, and then turned his body around, causing the swirl pattern in blood on the wooden floor.
Oh, okay.
One of the attackers took off his ski mask and threw it on the bed. They took the baseball bat and smeared blood onto it with gloved hands, so it looked like the murder weapon. They took the knife and fireplace poker and they fled, and that this was just something that James came up with on his own. And he took a buddy and he went to go kill this rich guy.
So why not rat on the two accomplices instead of the two people that could possibly fucking pay him?
Well, I don't know. But this is just another theory of what could have possibly happened.
Yeah, this is, you know, this is poking holes in
which is what the defense is supposed to do.
It sounds, honestly, more viable than what we've heard so far.
Yeah, because James has no idea. They basically brought him in and they were like, hey, there was this baseball bat. He was stabbed. What do you think happened here? And he was like, I guess somebody hit him with the baseball bat and stabbed him. And then they just rolled with it.
Yeah. And like, he was too stupid to ask for a lawyer.
Yeah.
But if you're going to commit crimes, please continue to be stupid and not get lawyers.
Oh, stay stupid.
Yeah, stay dumb.
Yeah. So this whole other theory was presented. I like that. I mean, I don't like it, but
I find it more plausible.
Yes. Than the initial one.
Yes.
So yeah. So Peggy, she did take the stand in her own defense.
Okay.
And a reporter stated that she, quote, came through as Mrs. Clean. She was beautiful and she was sweet and it all came through in the trial, end quote.
I mean, I understand that she's kind of participating in this because of her sister being abused, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't have any evidence to support that. Because I'm assuming that there's no police records or anything like that, which doesn't mean that she wasn't abused. But what the fuck does she have to gain?
Funny you say that. So, whenever Peggy, because she lived 2 hours away,
mm-hmm.
whenever Peggy would come visit Betty, they did all of these expensive high life things together. They would go shopping and they would go and to the salon and they would go do this and that and whatever. So, if Betty gets $6 million.
If Clinton gets $6 million, Dustin doesn't get $6 million. Clinton got $6 million.
That's not the way that these two worked.
I mean, she's still footing. I assume that she was paying for the spa and all that stuff when they were going out. So
yeah.
Just keep the fucking status quo?
Yeah.
You know, if you're in a quote-unquote open marriage and he already knows that you're fucking around, although you're taking a risk that he's going to wise up and divorce your stupid ass.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know. But that was just one of the theories that somebody threw out. It's like, well, if she gets $6 million, you know, she could throw $1 million to her sister and there you go.
She could, but that's going to look strange.
Well, yeah. That's true. I don't know. This whole case is
fucking
convoluted.
Weird.
Yes. So this time, the jury deliberated for less than 2 hours and they found Peggy Lowe not guilty.
Oh, and now Betty is sitting there going... Oh, hell to the no. To the no, no, no.
Can you imagine? Like, two different verdicts, same crime. Same crime.
Yeah, but they're basically saying that, you know,
Peggy... How could one be guilty and the other one isn't if they were both...
Either they were both
in on it or they were both not in on it.
No, one of them could have been in on it. Betty could have totally been in on it.
But Betty would not have known James if it weren't for Peggy.
Okay, so...
I don't even think Betty had even met James.
Okay, so she introduced James to a handyman, or introduced Betty to a handyman, and, you know, apparently us handymen are also murderers? I just want to know how that came up in casual conversation.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to murder my husband?
Or murder my sister's husband?
Yeah, it's so weird.
I don't know. So maybe if the initial crime scene investigation would have been a little bit more thorough, this new defense could have been used in Betty Wilson's trial. The initial coroner findings were all spot on. Nothing was missed, but the investigators kind of put blinders on whenever James White was thrown into the mix. So they
just took his word for it.
Yeah. So they either A, believed every word he said, or B, they wanted it to be him, and like the whole murder for hire thing to really be what happened here, and they just took his word for truth.
Yeah, without going to verify
a murderer,
anything.
Someone who is a child molester who murdered his own brothers in war. Why are we believing him? It doesn't make any sense.
Better question is, why the fuck is he still walking the street?
Yeah, well, he's not.
Well, I'm talking about, he shouldn't have been able to work at a school. He should have been in jail
before
for fragging
this.
His goddamn comrades.
Yeah.
I mean, fuck.
I know. So yeah, I don't know. Peggy had a great defense, and Betty just fucking didn't. And no one liked Betty, and everyone loved Peggy, so.
Bye.
I don't know.
Okay. I know Betty's gonna have something to say about this bullshit.
I can't remember if I put that in here or not. So, Dr. of Forensic Pathology, Walter Hoffman, spoke on the case and stated, quote, "If the law enforcement agency doesn't ask for help and does it all on their own and then ships the body in for autopsy, a certain vital amount of information has been lost. You lose the ability to really evaluate a crime scene as it is found in its virginal state before anyone has walked around or done anything with it," end quote.
That's kind of a, police didn't fuck up, but the police fucked up.
Yeah. And the coroner stated that the body was sent to him and that he nor none of his team were present at the actual crime scene.
Who the fuck?
Which, if you've seen,
bagged the body up then?
I guess just the police officers. There was no medical examiner. No, I know. I know.
What?
It's crazy.
Seems a little sloppy.
So this next part, literally, I was watching this and it literally made me say out loud, wow. So after Peggy Lowe was acquitted for murder, James White recanted his confession in a signed affidavit.
Okay.
He stated that he never met or even spoke with Betty Wilson and that he was never propositioned to murder Jack Wilson by neither Betty nor Peggy, and that he made the whole thing up. But since he wrote this, and I'm not sure how many years passed between writing it and saying this, he's in jail.
Obviously. Yeah. Obviously he's been biding his time in jail.
So he wrote that and then he took it all back and said he was indeed asked to murder Jack and was coerced into writing and signing the affidavit. And James says that he didn't actually kill Jack, but he knew about the situation. And it actually wasn't Betty who asked him to murder him. It was Peggy. And Betty didn't know.
He's not trustworthy, so...
No!
I don't know what lie to believe at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, you changed your story 3 fucking times now, and you weren't really believable to begin with, so...
I know. Oh, the book. Speaking of him being a liar. Okay, see, I totally forgot about it. So the book, the library book, he said that he had it because Betty had given it to him and paid him $200, like, in the book. So that was another thing that was just like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if that's a thing or not, but that was his story behind the library book. Okay, so Betty Wilson is in prison, serving her life sentence at the Julia Tutwiler Prison in Wetumpka, Alabama, with no chance of parole. Betty's first appeal was turned down. Betty is quoted as saying, This is a nightmare that hasn't ended yet, and I don't know if it will ever end. Not for me, not for my children, not for my precious grandchildren or my mother. It will never end, never, end quote. James White is also still serving his sentence. He was still sentenced to life, but the death penalty was taken off the table when he agreed to testify against Betty and Peggy, and his next parole hearing is in 2026.
That's not a very sweetheart deal that he got for rolling. All they did was take the death penalty off. They didn't even knock him down to, like, murder two or something like that so that he could have a... Wow, okay. Idiot.
Nope.
His lawyer also sucked.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So a former reporter from the area stated, one is either walking around free and should not be, or one is sitting in prison and should be free herself. You can't have both. End quote.
I think you can, though. I think it's entirely possible. But I think it's the other way around. I think it's entirely possible.
I think Peggy should be in jail, and I don't think Betty should be. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. Okay, so I do have, like, kind of a fun fact. Actually, I can't remember if it's fun or not. It's kind of fun. So this case is covered in an episode of Forensic Files, and holy cannoli, it is extremely graphic. This is like early Forensic Files. This is season one, so watchers beware. If you watch this episode, it's, even I found it quite disturbing, so.
Yeah.
There's that. And this case was actually the pilot for a little show called Snapped.
Why, that sounds familiar. Have we seen?
Oh, we've seen Snapped. And then there's Killer Couples. It's a whole
thing. I know Killer Couples.
But Snapped has been out for, 2004. But the episode wasn't actually aired until 2023. Whoa. Despite it being recorded in 2004 as the pilot for the show Snapped, which has been around and been rolling for 20 years.
Fuck. Why did they sit on it, I wonder?
I don't know. Another fun fact is that Peggy and Betty's father was a detective.
God, they're fucking
So do you think they did it? What do you think, honey? Give me your thoughts. I think they might have did it, but I don't know.
I think it's entirely possible that Betty hired somebody to kill her husband, and I find it entirely plausible that Peggy had nothing to do with it.
You think so?
Yeah, I really do. Betty's the only person that has financial... Yeah. That's going to gain anything from this. She's going to gain $6 million worth of shit. And she's going to be rid of the husband whom she doesn't like and finds repulsive.
Yeah.
Peggy is happily married. And while she ain't living large, it doesn't sound like, her sister still taking her out on play dates.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see what Peggy has to gain here.
That's true. But Betty would not have known James if it weren't for... Peggy.
But they
live 2 hours away. Why would she know him?
Okay, so they live 2 hours away, but she's getting these calls from this man when he's feeling blue.
No, and Betty. He was calling Peggy.
That's what I mean. So Peggy and Betty are out at the spa one day, and what's-his-face calls, and, well, who's that, and why are you on a 30-minute conversation
and
in the middle of
it? It's a guy who's down on his luck, and he calls me sometimes.
This is the handyman that works at the school, and we don't know that they never went to the Pegster's house and hung out for a little bit, and it sounds like old boy may have just shown the fuck up.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
I don't know.
They could have tangentially knew each other.
Yeah, I guess so. God.
That was one convoluted, fucked up case, honey. Jesus.
I know. I'm sorry. Those were my fun facts.
Those were not very fun.
Those were my facts.
Those were your facts. Oh, here we go. Why don't we do, don't you tell them one of the idioms that you learned about yesterday.
Okay.
We got off on a tangent yesterday while we were drinking on the back porch.
I know. I was like, I need to know the origin of every phrase ever. And I remember the phrases. I don't remember the origins, but I'm sure you do. One I remember is caught red-handed. You remember that one?
That was where you, in England, you couldn't butcher somebody else's kill. And in order for them to be caught, they literally had to have blood on their hands. So they were literally caught red-handed.
Yes. Yep. That was a good one.
The whole nine yards. Do you remember that?
The whole nine yards. Not at all.
That is from the 50 caliber machine gun where
you're using all 9 yards.
All 9 yards of ammunition. The belt is 9 yards long. So I gave them the whole 9 yards.
Yeah. Okay. I like that one.
Okay.
I like that.
What about being hungover?
I don't remember that one either.
Also from England. That is where normally people of low income, they wouldn't have a place to stay after they were severely intoxicated. So they would literally tie a rope from one side of the room to the other side of the room and hang them over the rope so that they could pass out and go to sleep there. And then you would...
You woke up hungover.
You woke up hungover.
Oh, that's funny. What about take it down a peg or two? What was that one?
Oh, that was one. That was where they were... it was like a communal drink.
Oh, and they passed it around.
They passed the drink around and you would drink down to your peg.
Yep.
And if people thought you were bogarting the cup or using it as a microphone... You know, and talking too much, then they would skip you for a turn or two and take you down a peg or two.
Yes, that's a good one.
That was a good one.
I like that. I like that a lot. Oh my goodness, it's really hot in here. I'm really sweaty, honey.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was fun. That was a weird.
That was a lot.
That was a weird, tough case.
Yeah.
Everybody, they have got an Instagram.
We do. It is at #murderpod. Spell it all out. And if you like this, give us 5 stars.
I don't see a reason why they shouldn't give you 5 stars, honey.
I don't either.
You're delightful.
Thank you. Thank you, honey. Yeah, rate, review, subscribe if you leave us a review.
A funny one, hopefully, or a fun one.
Yeah, we'll read it on the next episode we record. We also have a Patreon.
Any new hash browns?
No new hash browns.
Okay.
But that's okay.
It's okay.
But if you want to get some extra content, I think it's just patreon.com/#murder. And yeah.
Thanks for hanging out, guys.
Thank you for hanging out. Oh, wait. Hold on. Thanks for hanging out. Love you. Bye.
Bye. If you're going to hire a hitman, let's do a better job of hiring and not just hire the handyman down the street.
Bye, bye, bye.
Love you. Bye.
Be fun. Have safe. Thank you for listening to #murder. Episodes are written and edited by Alex Lewis and Scarlett Hibden. Our intro and outro music is written and played by Derek Branton. Our cover art is by the lovely Lauren Walker. And our name was created by the most wonderful, supportive, and super hot boyfriend, Dustin Branton. We hope you've enjoyed your time with us. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or ideas, you can reach us at #murderpod@gmail.com. That's hashtag murderpod@gmail.com. And don't forget to tell all of your friends about us. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Here we go.
I'm going to break your phone in half.
And it's nobody. And she put, all capitalized some of her review there.
Oh, I did that.
No. Oh.
For emphasis.
Oh, okay.
And he was from in 1978. Oh.
Okay, no cousin fucking going on.
You are so dumb.
I am dumb.
And this is very upsetting.
Not nearly as upsetting as that.
I'm throwing it out the window.
I love you so much.
Because there's literally no way that... Oh, wait. This new event...